Okay, well, we're going to delve into the book of Daniel once again, and thank God for the visions and dreams given in the book of Daniel. I mean, only God can declare the end from the beginning, and that's what he's done in this, you know, wonderful book. So you'll probably know that the book of Daniel consists of both history and prophecy. We could say that it's history past and history future. Chapters 1 to 6 that we've already looked at in the series were largely historical and chronological. Chapters 7 to 12 are prophetic, and that's what we're on to now. So while it was all future when shown to Daniel, some of these prophecies have been fulfilled and there's many others still to come. So these last chapters consist of four prophetic dreams or visions given to Daniel. But really, this first one that we're going to look at now in chapter 7, that provides the foundation and basis for basically all the subsequent revelation. So this is an important chapter to understand if we're really going to grasp the rest of the book. So don't drift off. Don't think about lunch. Just yet, anyway. As tempting as that may be. So in Daniel chapter 7, that's which we are in today, we are presented with an amazing God-given vision of all the kingdoms that would dominate planet Earth from the time of the Babylonian exile onwards. Every major player is revealed right up until the time that the mystery of God is finally revealed and Jesus' kingdom finally is set up. So Daniel chapter 7 has four main sections. It starts with the vision of the beasts, then it has a vision of the Ancient of Days in heaven upon his throne, then it has a vision of the one like a son of man coming upon the clouds, and then it gives an interpretation of the visions. So you can really divide it into both earthly and heavenly scenes, and that's what I've done. So it's an interesting chapter because we get to see what man is doing on earth as well as God's response in heaven. And this message is going to revolve really around the earthly scene. The heavenly scene will be next time. So this is kind of like the bad news and the good news still to come. In other words, first we've got to eat our Brussels sprouts, then we get the apple grumble. Should also say that the recipe for this message is kind of 9 parts Bible prophecy and 1 part speculation. Hope you're okay with that. Alright, so what are we going to explore? Firstly, the vision of the beasts. Why beasts? What do they stand for? Secondly, the focus on the last beast. Why did Daniel want to know specifically about this last beast? Beast with iron claws and 10 horns. Thirdly, we'll look at the little horn. Who or what is this little horn that arises and takes control? And we'll just close with some brief applications for such a chapter as this. Alright, so let's have a look now at verses 1 to 7 of Daniel chapter 7. So it says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream, and visions passed through his mind as he was laying on his bed. He wrote down the substance of his dream, and Daniel said, in the vision at night I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven, churning up the great sea. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea. And the first was like a lion, and it had wings of an eagle. And I watched until its wings were torn off, and it was lifted from the ground, so that it stood on 2 feet like a man, and the heart of a man was given to it. And there before me was a second beast, which looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides, and it had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, "Get up and eat your fill of flesh." After that I looked, and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard, and on its back it had 4 wings like those of a bird. And this beast had 4 heads, and it was given authority to rule. And after that, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth, and it crushed and it devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. So first of all, you'll note that this vision was given to Daniel in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. So in terms of the chronology of Daniel, this chapter has actually moved back 14 years from where we last saw Daniel with the lions in chapter 6. And Daniel's given this prophetic dream consisting of these four beasts arising out of the sea. Now, if you know your prophecy and you know your types, then you'll know that the sea or the waters are often used prophetically in the Bible to speak of the Gentile nations. So this vision is of four kingdoms that would arise from and dominate the Gentile nations. But there's also a literal interpretation as well as a symbolic meaning surrounding this sea. You'll note that it specifically talks about the Great Sea, and this is appointed to the Mediterranean Sea, from which all of these kingdoms would arise. Now, if you're thinking, I think I've seen these nations before, then you'd be correct. These same four kingdoms were presented to us in Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel chapter 2, but in a different form. While Daniel 2 portrayed these kingdoms as part of this great statue of a man, chapter 7 presents these same nations as beasts. Let's just explore each of these beasts and their link to Daniel chapter 2. So first of all, it says, the first was like a lion, and it had wings of an eagle, and I watched until its wings were torn off. And it was lifted from the ground so that it stood on 2 feet, like a man, and the heart of a man was given it. So this corresponds with Nebuchadnezzar's dream where he saw the head of gold. So that speaks of the Babylonian Empire. And the Babylonian Empire was known for its use of gold and its strength, which is the image of the lion, and its swiftness of its conquests. And that's shown by its depiction of this lion with eagle's wings, until its wings were torn off and the heart of a man was given to it. And this emphasizes Nebuchadnezzar's own conversion from a proud ruler to a humble servant of the living God, as we saw when we did Daniel chapter 4. And then there's a second beast. It says there was a second beast which looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And it was told, get up and eat your fill of flesh. This corresponds with the second kingdom from Daniel 2, the silver chest and arms, which is the Mede and Persian Empire. And the Medo-Persian Empire was known for its use of silver. And it's seen here as a bear because of its power, but slower, lumbering movement. In Daniel's vision, it was lifted up on one side because the Persians were more powerful than the Medes in this alliance. And the 3 ribs that are in its mouth speak of 3 great conquests that this empire undertook in defeating Babylon, Lydia, and Egypt. Thirdly, it says, after that I looked, and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard, and on its back it had 4 wings like those of a bird. And this beast had 4 heads, and it was given authority to rule. This corresponds with the thighs of bronze from Daniel chapter 2, and it speaks of the Greek Empire. You know, and the vision emphasizes the swiftness of its exploits. By the age of 28, Alexander the Great, who headed up the Greek Empire, had conquered the civilized world. Commentators have pointed out that there was nothing in the history of the world that was equal to the swiftness of his conquests. And this beast had 4 heads, because after Alexander's death, this empire was split between four generals. Fourthly, it says, after that, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. This corresponds with the legs of iron from Daniel 2, speaking about the Roman Empire. So this last beast, the Roman Empire, is pictured as a powerful beast with iron teeth. You know, the Roman Empire was known for its use of iron, and the iron represented their immense strength. I mean, history records that the Roman Empire was ruthless and violent. Just as a personal note, I remember in the 2000s, I went to Rome and, you know, visited, like everyone else does in Rome, the Colosseum. And yes, if you've seen the movie Gladiator, then you've got an idea of what went on there. I remember our tour guide told us that in the afternoons, and this is not very nice, but in the afternoons they would fight African animals against European animals. And at night it was gladiators versus animals, or gladiators versus slaves, and, unfortunately, sometimes Christians versus animals. And even today it's fair to say that this place has quite the atmosphere. Well, this empire, in its different stages, is focused on specifically as the rest of this chapter will unfold. So as a side note, we need to ask, why does God use an image of a beast or beasts when they were previously seen as this glorious stature of a man? Well, it was and still is quite common to actually associate kingdoms and nations with animals. I mean, even today you might speak about the Russian bear or the American eagle, the British lion or the Chinese dragon. And of course, none of these would strike as much fear into an enemy's heart as that of my own country, which has the mighty New Zealand kiwi. Okay. So maybe having a flightless bird that has no means of defence might not have been the wisest choice to illustrate the nation's strength, and nor does it overly strike too much fear into our enemies, whoever they are. But there's another reason, a better reason, why God used beasts in this vision. Because as I've said, in Daniel 2, Nebuchadnezzar had this dream and he saw these coming kingdoms as this great statue made up of precious metals of gold, silver, bronze and iron. Well, that is the interpretation from man's point of view. He sees these kingdoms as something glorious, something precious, something noble, something worthy, something strong. But what does God think? Daniel chapter 7 presents these same kingdoms from God's point of view. And that's why we get beasts, ravenous beasts that kill and slaughter. And unfortunately, though man likes to pat himself on the back for the wonderful achievements that he's made, God's view of these empires is the real truth. All right, let's zero in now as we look at verses 7 and 8 on this Roman Empire, which we'll see comes in two stages. It says, after that, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening, very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. And it was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. And while I was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little one, which came up before them. And 3 of the first horns were uprooted before it. This horn had eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth that spoke boastfully. So Daniel focuses most of his attention on this fourth beast, said to be terrifying, very powerful. You may remember from chapter 2 when we did Daniel that the legs of iron represented the Roman Empire, but there was also a final stage, the 10 toes on the statue's feet. Well, we see the exact same thing here in chapter 7. So while the Roman Empire officially ended in 476 AD, the Bible clearly shows that there will be a revival of the Roman Empire in some form in the last days. And just as a reminder, from Daniel chapter 2, the two legs of iron pictured both the east and western aspects to the Roman Empire. But those two legs go into 10 toes, which are part iron and part clay. So they represent the final form of this Roman Empire, which again we see here in Daniel 7, with this fourth beast having 10 horns, just like Daniel 2 had the 10 toes. And this 10 division stage of the Roman Empire is also pictured in the book of Revelation, again represented by 10 horns. In Revelation 17 it says this, "I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had 7 heads and 10 horns." And it goes on to say, "The 10 horns you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but who for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast. And they have one purpose and will give their power and authority to the beast." So both Revelation and Daniel tell us that the horns on this beast represent kings that will come. And Revelation says that these 10 kings over this revived Roman Empire will give the authority to another. So this corresponds exactly with what we're reading here in the Daniel passage, because it states that a little horn will come up among the other 10 and will take control. And this little horn is the coming Antichrist. So let's just investigate this a little bit. Firstly, let's look at the timing of his rise. Daniel 7 shows us that the little horn is not actually one of the 10 horns, but comes up after them. This is important. There's many today that are looking for the Antichrist. Who is the Antichrist? Is it this person? Is it that person? Well, both Daniel and Revelation show us that the 10 kings come first. And, for that matter, the Antichrist cannot be revealed until the restrainer, the Holy Spirit working through the church and through his general role of restraining evil, is taken out of the way, according to 2 Thessalonians 2:7-8. So the church is not going to see the Antichrist. Secondly, look at the manner of his rise. We see that he is described as a little horn to begin with. So it would seem that he will have an insignificant, unnoticed beginning, but then will rise in power. Thus, it's not likely that he's going to come from like a royal or prominent family. So no, King Charles is not the Antichrist. Thirdly, look at the power of this coming one. It says the little horn, the Antichrist, comes up after the 10 kings, but he actually takes 3 of them out. 3 of the 10 established horns or kings are uprooted, Daniel says. Again, this is not something that is historical. This is something still to come. And we'll see more about this man, this little horn, later in the chapter. But finally, just look at the characteristics of the little horn. What does it say about this man? It says he will have a big mouth. He'll be one who rules with great boasting, great blasphemy. He will speak out against the God of heaven and all that's important to God. Now, in the next little section in Daniel, verses 9 to 14, that gives us a vision of the heavenly scene. What is happening as heaven as this is going down on earth? And that's going to be the subject of our next message. So for now, let's just have a look at the interpretation of this incredible vision that Daniel is given. So verses 15 to 22 says, I, Daniel, was troubled in spirit, and the visions that passed through my mind disturbed me. I approached one of those standing there and asked him the true meaning of all this. So he told me and gave me the interpretation of these things. The four great beasts are four kingdoms that will arise from the earth, but the saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom and possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. Then I wanted to know the true meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others and most terrifying, with its iron teeth and its bronze claws, the beast that crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. I also wanted to know about the 10 horns on its head and about the other horn that came up, before which 3 of them fell, the horn that looked more imposing than the others, and it had eyes and a mouth that spoke boastfully. And as I watched, this horn was waging war against the saints and defeating them, until the Ancient of Days came and pronounced judgment in favour of the saints of the Most High, and the time came when they possessed the kingdom. So we shouldn't take these things lightly, because we see in this vision that Daniel himself was greatly alarmed by it. You know, it actually freaked him out, and he wasn't one to be scared easily. So what Daniel saw was pretty full on. But having been alarmed and perplexed by this fourth beast especially, Daniel asks about this last kingdom. He specifically wants to know about the 10 horns and this 11th horn, this little horn, that was even more imposing and frightening. And it was this last horn that was said to be the one that waged war against the saints and was winning, until a judicial decree came from the Ancient of Days, which is God the Father, that stops the events of earth in its tracks. So, who are these saints that the 11th horn persecutes? These saints are the believers during the Antichrist's reign in the second part of the tribulation. They are often called tribulation saints. I don't believe the church is on earth at this time, but one thing to note about these saints is that they are given into the Antichrist's hand for a time, times, and half a time. That is, the Antichrist persecutes, dominates, and rules the saints during the last 3.5 years of the tribulation leading up to the return of Jesus. So we need to be careful and beware of those that say that the church will be around during this time, but that God will protect her, because it's wrong on both accounts. The church will be removed from the earth before this time, according to Revelation 3:10, 1 Thessalonians 1:10. And those that become believers during this time are not promised protection. They are specifically said to be handed over to the Antichrist during this time. And their choice to follow Jesus is going to lead to great persecution and martyrdom. All right, let's have a look now at verses 23 to 25. And it says, he gave me this explanation. The fourth beast is a fourth kingdom that will appear on earth. It will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The 10 horns are 10 kings who will come from this kingdom. And after them, another king will arise, different from the earlier ones, and he will subdue 3 kings. He will speak against the Most High and oppress his saints, and try to change the set times and the laws. And the saints will be handed over to him for a time, times, and half a time. So this passage is important because it gives us more clues concerning this fourth beast. We read that this last kingdom will be different from the others and will devour the whole earth. Then out of this kingdom will come 10 kings, and finally a last king will arise that will overpower the saints of God, for a time at least. In Arnold Fruchtenbaum's book, Footsteps of the Messiah, he talks about all the different kingdoms that are to come and the different phases, especially of this fourth Roman Empire. And he talks about how it comes firstly in a united stage, then a one world government stage, then a 10 division stage, and then finally in the Antichrist stage. So it's interesting to note that the Bible says that this fourth kingdom will devour the whole earth. And Fruchtenbaum points out that this was never fulfilled in the Roman Empire of 2,000 years ago. And its fulfillment will be seen in the last days before Jesus' return. And we shouldn't be surprised at that. You know, world leaders often speak about the need for global government, a one world government, global governance. Just to give you a few quotes, even Albert Einstein, in the aftermath of World War II, 1945, he said, "Mankind's desire for peace can be realized only by the creation of a world government." David Rockefeller, at a speech at a Bilderberg meeting in 1991, he says, "We are on the verge of a global transformation. All we need is the right major crisis, and the nations will accept a one world government." Pope Francis, 2019, he said, "Global governance must ensure peace and eliminate the structures of injustice that divide the nations and the peoples of the earth." Or when COVID-19 was on, Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum, he wrote a book and he said, "The pandemic has underscored the need for global governance to manage interconnected crises and ensure a coordinated response." Or Antonio Guterres, who leads the United Nations, he said, "Global governance must be strengthened to address the interconnected challenges of our time." And yes, as I've just read out, for these world leaders, all that they think is needed is just the right crises to bring this in. And the rapture of the church may very well be that right global crisis that they are looking for and even hoping for. I hope so. Concerning the 10 kings, it's actually interesting to note that the Club of Rome, back in 1973, divided the world up into 10 regions. That's actually, I've shown in my written study an image of those divisions. And so we see from Daniel that after this 10 division stage, that another king will arise. This king will hate God, hate God's people, will radically change the laws to bring about a global persecution of God's people. And this ruler, like I've said, is the Antichrist. And he will rule, it says, for a time, times and half a time. That is a year, 2 years and half a year, or 3.5 years. But, as Elon Musk stated at a world government summit in Dubai, 2023, he says, "I think we should be a little bit concerned about actually becoming too much of a single world government. If we are too much of a single civilization, then the whole thing might collapse." Well, it will be united under 10 kings and then under one man. And yes, the whole thing will collapse, thankfully, at the coming of Jesus Christ. So, in conclusion, this chapter has shown that the Antichrist will arise at the time of what's called the fourth beast, the revived Roman Empire, still to come in these days. And 10 kings will rule first, and then he will follow them in a global dictatorship. But this terrifying last worldly kingdom ruled by the Antichrist is actually going to come to an end quite quickly. For while we have been looking at what mankind and Satan is plotting and planning for this earth, there's a whole different plan being hatched in heaven, and the schemes of this coming world leader will be dramatically interrupted by the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Yeah. But more on that next time. So as we close, I just want to think about what takeaways are there from a chapter such as this. Because it should be a reminder and an encouragement in the following areas. Firstly, as believers, to persevere in our faith. For God has not promised easy times in these last days. And we need to be strong in Him. Secondly, to trust in God's sovereignty. For we see in this chapter, and especially in the next study, that our Lord is sovereign. He is ruler over all. Thirdly, we should be living with an eternal perspective. For the kingdoms of this world, as we have seen, have a short, defined shelf life. Fourthly, we should be living, anticipating the return of Jesus, because the events in this world are lining up to the signs and the prophecies given of the last days in God's word. And finally, we should have hope for the future, for we know that God has amazing plans to make all things right and to bring about His kingdom, His rule on planet Earth. So we live in exciting times. God is in control of all that occurs. And we'll see this next time as we explore the heavenly scene that's pictured in this chapter. Thanks once again for listening in, and I hope that you can make it for the next one as we carry on in this chapter. May God bless you.